We will kill the ones who eat us and eat the ones we kill. We had no choice. I moved quickly for the door, but he stopped me. Wait a minute, he said. We're almost out of whiskey. He was right. The Old Crow pint was empty except for a few drops down in one corner. The bars would not open for 3 hours. Don't worry, he said. I know where there's more, upstairs in the president's office. Wonderful, I said. We can't run out of whiskey at a time like this. Go get it. We'll need everything we can get our hands on before this thing is over. He chuckled and tried to sprint off, but the thing attached to his ankle made him stumble. God damn it, he screamed. I'd kill to get rid of this thing. Don't say that, I snapped. We are innocent men. We are working within the system. And besides, I think we have some good crank outside in the car. He went upstairs to loot the president's office, and I went down those long marble steps once again to where my Jeep was parked in front of a fire plug on the street. Hot damn, I thought, this will be a very fast day. It was still raining. There was not another sound on the street, only rain in the elm trees and the fast, lazy slap of my brand-new white low-cut Chuck Taylor All-Stars on the sidewalk. I felt like a polar bear, and I wanted to hear some music. The big, weird Jeep was still there, lurking peacefully under the trees and almost invisible in the mist and the hanging Spanish moss. It was huge, but it had no color. It came from the factory with no paint, only a dull stainless steel finish that soon faded to a filthy shade of yellow, and millions of tiny reddish pits all over the hood and the doors and even the Panzer-style undercarriage. What you see here is priceless chemical development that was applied to this vehicle after only 55 years of careful research at our secret color lab in the Milanese Alps. So you must be patient, he warned. This process takes time. It involves the slow liberation of astrobacteria, which is frequently lethal to laymen, and which did, in fact, end the life of the tragic genius who first invented it, a man named Squain from Austria. Well, maybe so, I figured. It was ugly and pitted all over with millions of festering poison pits, which boiled and bubbled constantly, infected all who touched it. But it was a full-bore Lamborghini hot rod, a monstrous thing that weighed 5,000 pounds with bulletproof glass, 12 cylinders with a top speed of 125 miles an hour, and a 50-caliber machine gun mount behind the driver's seat. One night on the Big Sur Highway, I beat a Porsche 928 from the Carmel Bridge to Nepenthe by 9 minutes, mainly because I beat her like a cheap hound on the curves. It was a small woman driving the 928, and she went all to pieces when I passed her at 110 on the Bixby Creek Bridge and then squeezed her into the sand dunes. Why not? It happened to me once, in Sacramento, when some Japs and a brute Lamborghini ran me down on the parkway like I was standing still, then bashed me repeatedly at top speed till I finally lost control. It's one of the ugliest moments of my life, and I'll never forget it. Those tattooed swine, I should have had them locked up, but I was helpless. After that, I got one of my own for $150,000. That is another story, and I was too busy that day to even think about it. Dawn was coming up, and it was still raining, and I had to be in court at 9 o'clock, and ye gods, I still had this freak to deal with, this gutless zombie with a beeper on his leg, who obviously needed help, and somehow I was it. How had it happened? I slid into the Lambo and locked the heavy armored door behind me. What dangerous craziness had plunged me into this situation? All I'd wanted to do was hang out in the library for a while and read some law. But somehow I wound up with Andrew on my hands. They had railroaded him into jail for 16 years. Now I was his only hope. One way or another, I had to get him into a courtroom situation where he'd be able to confront the system on its own mean terms. Put him on the attack instead of always on his knees. Right. And the first thing we needed to get that goddamn beeping manacle off his leg. Indeed, but first things first. Calm down, cool beer, relax with elegant music, and yes, the crank. Andrew was looking a bit limp, and we would both need special energy for the ordeal I knew was coming. Once I broke him out of jail, as it were, I would be responsible for him until my lawyers took over. They were good, and I felt sure they could get him a new trial. Never mind this jail bullshit. He was innocent. He never had a chance, but no more. The worm had turned. My man Andrew was about to know what it felt like to go into court like a warrior and beat the swine to death with their own rules. I felt good about this, very calm and focused as I buried my face in a silver bowl of pure speed and snorted until my whole head went numb and my eyeballs seemed to be fusing together. I punched the music up to 600 watts and felt the Jeep shudder nicely as Lyle Lovett came on. Thank God this thing is soundproof, I thought, or we might have a serious police problem, which is something I like to avoid. But it's getting harder and harder. These are bad times for people who sit outside the library at dawn on a rainy morning, get ripped to the tits on crank and powerful music. As I walked back to the library, I remembered Robert Kennedy's words. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. But not me, Jack. Whatever I was doing that morning, it was sure as hell not nothing. I was about to pluck an innocent victim from the jaws of the system. Hell yes, I thought. Thomas Jefferson would be proud of me today, and so would Bobby Kennedy. The crank was taking hold, which caused me to think rapidly in odd mathematical terms, and suddenly understand that Thomas Jefferson had been dead only 142 years longer than Bobby Kennedy, which is not a long time in places like Egypt and Cambodia, and approximately the same, in fact, as the life expectancy of the average American woman by the year 2015. I was brooding on these things as I bounded up the long gray steps and found Andrew fretting nervously on his slab in the main floor executive men's room. He had some rumpled-looking Xerox pages out in front of him, but he quickly gathered them up as I entered. "Where the fuck have you been?" he snarled. "I'm about to go crazy. They expect me back at jail in 20 minutes. I'm doomed." He eyed me sullenly and lifted a quart bottle of Southern Comfort to his lips, sucking it down his throat so fast that his eyes rolled back in his head, and I thought he was passing out. "You bastard," I yelled. "Give me that goddamn bottle. I want you on your toes when we go to court. You're about to face a life or death situation." "Screw you," he said. "You're crazy as a goddamn loon. I should have had you arrested the minute I saw you." I gave him a quick prefrontal lift, bounced him off the mirror. Then I seized the whiskey bottle from his hand as he slumped to the floor. "Get a grip on yourself, Andrew," I said. I gave him a rolled-up $100 bill and watched him snort almost half of our whole stash into his head like a bullet. He choked desperately for a few seconds, then leapt to his feet and fixed me with a wrong and unnatural grin. I could see he was going sideways. "You fool," I said. "You took too much." "Fool?" he screeched. "Nobody calls me a fool." He laughed distractedly and lurched at me, but I shoved him away. "Calm down," I said. "We have serious business to do." "Business?" he shouted. "What kind of business?" He lunged at me again, but I could see that he was going into spasms. "You business bastard," he jabbered. "I know what kind of business you're in. Yeah, take care of business, Mr. Businessman." Then he scrambled up to his wet marble ledge above the urinals again, clinging to a pipe with one hand and fumbling in his pocket with the other. "Be careful," I said. "We'll both be fucked if you fall down and split your goddamn skull before we get to court." He stared at me for about 20 seconds, saying nothing. Then he reached down, demanding the whiskey, and unfolded the wad of Xerox pages that he'd been reading so intensely when I came back from my run to the Jeep. "What court?" he yelled. "What are you, the judge?" Ye gods, I thought, what now? This poor fool had been in jail for so long he can't handle the crank and the whiskey and freedom all at once. "Who are you?" he screamed. "What do you do for a living?" "Never mind that," I said. "Right now I'm your skyhook. So come off that goddamn ledge, and let's get some of the stuff on paper. We don't have much time." "Paper?" he screeched. "What are you, some kind of writer?" He laughed harshly. "You want paper, shit eyes? I'll give you goddamn paper. Yeah, I'll give you writing, you asshole. If you think you're a goddamn writer, get ready to drop to your knees." Then he lifted the crumpled pages up to his eyes and started to read, but I cut him off. "What is that stuff?" I asked. "Give it to me." He smiled disdainfully and jerked the papers out of my grasp. "Stuff?" he said. "You call this stuff?" "Okay," I said. "What is it?" He hesitated, then smiled happily. "This is my writing," he said. "This is my stuff. This is probably the best stuff ever written in English, and it's mine. I wrote it when I was in jail, like Ernest Hemingway." "Ernest was never in jail," I said, "at least not like you. He never swept floors in a library at night with a beeper strapped to his ankle. It was cruel, but I felt the time had come to rein him in, to flog him back to reality. But he was getting hysterical, so I let him read on. "Stand back," he yelled. "I'm the most amazing writer in the world. I wrote this one night in the jail library when no one else was watching." "Wonderful," I said. "Read your crazy shit." He hurled the whiskey bottle at me, but it missed and went into the stalls where it exploded against a wall and left glass all over the floor. Andrew ignored the explosion and began reading his work in a loud and menacing voice. He had obviously done this more than once, probably in solitary confinement. I listened curiously as he launched into the thing and started to get wound up. It was something about electric storms and Benjamin Franklin. But I was not really listening. My mind was on court. Meanwhile, Andrew raved on, rolling his eerie phrases like a man gone wild in a trance, and I began to pay more attention. Jesus, I thought, this is pretty good stuff. I recognized a certain rhythm, a weird meter of some kind that reached me, even if I wasn't listening. It was strange. I had a feeling that I knew it all from somewhere, but I couldn't quite place it. Soon I felt a queer humming all over my body, like falling into music, and for a long minute or two, I actually liked Andrew again. He definitely had a feel for words, almost like an idiot savant. By the time he was halfway through, I was ready to give him money. I was listening carefully now. He called his screed electricity. This is how it went.
Electricity. Electricity. Electricity, yes.